ॐ साग्रजातं सहगण रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादां सहगणललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। नमो महावदान्याय कृष्णप्रेमप्रदायते कृष्णाय कृष्णचैतन्यनामने गौरद्विषे नमः। हे कृष्णकरुणासिन्धो दीनबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेशगोपिकान्तराधाकान्त नमोऽस्तुते। तप्तकाञ्चनगौराङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये। जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतगदाधर श्रीवासादिगौरभक्तवृन्द। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, हरे कृष्ण। सो वी आर बिगिनिंग भगवद गीता एज इट इज वंस अगेन फ्रॉम द बिगिनिंग, हैविंग कंप्लीटेड द एंटायर भगवद गीता ओवर अ पीरियड ऑफ सम इयर्स, ट्वाइस आई बिलीव। नाउ अगेन द एंटायर भगवद गीता इज बीइंग started again. One can go on like this eternally because the message of the Lord is eternal. As we are going to hear, the Lord himself says that he has taught this message to the sun god Vivaswan many millions of years ago. It may have changed a little bit in the style of presentation or in the format, but the essential knowledge that Krishna presented Vivaswan is still the same. This is the difference between spiritual knowledge and material knowledge. Material knowledge becomes outdated, it changes with time, and therefore the same body of knowledge when presented many years later will appear quite different. But that is not so with spiritual knowledge. Spiritual knowledge always remains the same. It develops according to the realization of the acharyas, who keep adding wonderful realizations to the existing body of knowledge to further enrich and nourish whatever has already been given before. This introduction that we are going to discuss now for the next several days, minimum 1 week, maybe more, is a masterpiece of an essay written by Srila Prabhupada, spanning about 34 pages or so. And if one understands this introduction, then essentially one would have understood the Bhagavad Gita, at least the essence of it. It has been very, very systematically presented, step by step, and all the basic concepts that we need to know to make our life successful are here in this introduction. So we will study this introduction very, very carefully, and we will request everyone who is coming here, or even if you are hearing it on the radio, that you please keep the book with you when the class is going on. There are some copies here. Have they been distributed? Yeah. And also, please read carefully and try to think about each paragraph that Srila Prabhupada has written here. And if everybody wishes, and if Parvati Mataji allows, then we could have an examination at the end of the introduction. Voluntary. No force, only those who wish can attend, and then special transcendental gifts can be given to those who sit for the exam, and this will strengthen our understanding of the introduction. And perhaps it's not a bad idea to have it for the whole Bhagavad Gita as we go on chapter by chapter. In this way our understanding will become very strong. So as is the custom with every endeavor in the cultural and spiritual field, every work begins with a Mangalacharan, with an invocation to auspiciousness. The word Mangal means auspicious. Mangalacharan means that which invokes. That before any drama is written, any book is written, any lecture is begun, or any literary endeavor or cultural endeavor is begun, there is always a Mangalacharan that is spoken or written. And generally all these invocations to auspiciousness are connected to God in some way. So here also naturally, as devotees, Srila Prabhupada, as a pure devotee of the Lord, Srila Prabhupada is making this Mangalacharan. We have been discussing in other forums recently that in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami has said that a Mangalacharan fulfills three objectives, or to put it another way, that there are three types of Mangalacharan. One is called Vastu Nirdesh, in which the objective of the work that is being commenced is clearly defined and established. The subject matter that is to be spoken about is clearly identified. The second purpose of a Mangalacharan or an auspicious invocation is to offer obeisances to the Lord, to his devotees, and to other respectable personalities. That is called Namaskar. The third objective of a Mangalacharan is Ashirvad, to offer benedictions to the readers and to others, and to invoke the benedictions of the Lord and his pure devotees upon the author and upon the devotees and upon the rest of the world. So these are the three purposes of a Mangalacharan. Here also in the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada begins with such an invocation, which largely consists of Namaskar, where he offers obeisances. Before every lecture also in our movement, we have a custom, we chant at least a few verses of Mangalacharan, and then we begin the lecture. So, since it is something that we encounter every day, it is important for us to go through these verses, at least the standard Mangalacharan, and if possible, memorize these verses, and at least, if not to memorize, then to understand clearly what they mean. So, let us begin our discussion of the introduction to the Bhagavad Gita by reading the Mangalacharan that Prabhupada is stating here. So we will chant one verse at a time, and then we'll talk a little bit about it, go on to the next, till we complete the whole Mangalacharan. You may share the book also, if you like, with your neighbors, if your neighbors do not have the book.
ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकया
चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन
तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
Usually all these important verses, they begin with the address Om. Om is an address to the Supreme Lord. It invokes the Supreme Person. And to further clarify who that Om is, then the verse speaks about it. Like for example, the very Srimad, the Srimad Bhagavatam begins with the verse, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So Om refers to the Supreme Lord, but exactly who that Supreme Lord is also stated there. Om Namaha, I offer my respectful obeisances unto the Lord Bhagavate, whose name is Vasudeva. So Vasudevaya, unto Vasudev, Bhagavate, unto that Bhagavan, that Supreme Lord. So here also, it's Om Ajnana Timirandhasya. Asya refers to of, possessive. It refers to somebody who is of that nature or who possesses that. So Andhasya, of one who is blind. Andha means blind. And blinded by what? Timira, darkness. What kind of darkness? Ajnana. So Ajnana, Timira, Andhasya. Blindness that is caused due to the darkness of ignorance. So that is the meaning of Ajnana, Timira, Andhasya. And then the shloka says, Jnana Anjana Shalakaya. The word shalaka refers to, it has many meanings in Sanskrit literature, but one of the meanings that is especially relevant here is that it is a small instrument like a stick that is used in medical treatments and especially surgical treatments of the eye for removing cataracts and so on. Especially in Ayurvedic terminology, this term comes in. So here we have spiritual cataract because there is Ajnana Timira Andhasya. We are blinded, just like a person is blinded when there is a cataract and one cannot see properly. So similarly, because of the darkness of ignorance, one cannot see things clearly, spiritually. One cannot see things as they are. A person with cataract sees things blurred, if at all. So his vision is not proper. Similarly, a person who is spiritually not aware is not able to see things as they are. He or she sees things blurred, a different version of reality. They don't see the actual truth. So therefore, some kind of surgery is required to remove the cataract, this spiritual cataract that is blocking our spiritual vision. So therefore the word shalaka is used. It's some kind of surgical operation that has to be done on the spiritual eye, whose vision is right now covered by the cataract of ignorance and darkness. So what kind of instrument or torchlight is needed for that? So it mentions here, Jnana Anjana. Jnana means knowledge. Anjana means an ointment. So with the help of that instrument, you have to put some ointment on the eye so that the cataract can be removed. Similarly, we need a certain ointment of knowledge to be smeared on the spiritual eye so that this cataract will be removed and we can see things from a spiritual point of view. We will see things as they are. Chakshur unmilitam yena. By which, yena, by which, chakshu means our eyes, unmilita means will be opened. So right now, because of this ignorance and darkness, our spiritual eye is blocked, so we are not able to see. But when this ointment of knowledge is applied, jnananjana shalakaya, then what happens? Chakshur unmilitam yena. Our spiritual eye is opened and we can see things as they are. So who does that? Yena refers to by whom? Tasmai, so unto that person who does that for us, and to that person who surgically, with a spiritual surgery, removes our spiritual cataract, or rather the material covering to our spiritual vision, that person is the spiritual master, the guru, Shri Guru. And unto the Shri Guru, therefore it is Gurave. So it says, Tasmai unto him, Shri Gurave Namaha, I offer my obeisances. So the translation given here by Srila Prabhupada is as follows. I was born in the darkest of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torch of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto him. So this is usually the first verse of the Mangalacharan. Prabhupada also quotes it here. And he follows it up. This is called the Sri Guru Pranam. And the next verse that Prabhupada mentions in the Mangalacharan is an offering of obeisances unto Srila Rupa Goswami. Therefore it is called Sri Rupa Goswami Pranam. Rupa Goswami is a very important acharya for us. We have so many great Vaishnava acharyas in our parampara. And all of them are very great exalted souls. Especially, we see the six Goswamis. They have a very special place. But amongst everybody, Srila Rupa Goswami has a very special place. In fact, as Gaudiya Vaishnavas, we are called Rupa Anugas. Rupa Anuga. Anuga. Ga means to go, and Anu means behind. So Anuga means a follower. So Rupa Anuga means followers of Rupa Goswami. That is how we are described. So although the other acharya is also very important, Rupa Goswami's special place is that he is the Sampradaya Acharya after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for all of us. We are all faithful followers of Srila Rupa Goswami. And why is Rupa Goswami considered so special? Because he understands the innermost desires of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Who is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? He is none other than Sri Krishna, who has descended in this age to propagate the religion or the religious process for this age, the Yuga Dharma, which is the Sankirtan Yajna, to spread pure love of God, and especially to propagate the mood of Vrindavan everywhere. So Rupa Goswami, when he was in Jagannath Puri, understood exactly the heart of Mahaprabhu. When Mahaprabhu used to chant in the Rath Yatra, he would recite certain verses, the meaning of which only Swarup Damodar could understand. But on one occasion, Rupa Goswami was present, and he understood the verse, the meaning of the verse Mahaprabhu chanted, and he composed another verse that explained the meaning of Mahaprabhu's verse. When Mahaprabhu read this, he was astonished, and he told Swarup Damodar that how is it that he has understood the desire of my heart? And Swarup Damodar said, it's only because he has received your mercy, otherwise it is not possible. So therefore we understand Rupa Goswami has understood not only what is in the heart of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he has also understood how to implement and actually put into effect, translate into reality the mission of Mahaprabhu. So this is the next verse. So let us read this.
Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupah Kada Mahyam Dadati Svapadantikam.
Shri Chaitanya Manaha Abhishtam. Abhishta means something that is desired. So Sri Rupa has understood, first of all, the Manaha Abhishta, the innermost desire in the heart of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And not only that, he has Thapitam Yena Bhutale. That desire of Mahaprabhu, he has actually practically established. Sthapitam Bhutale. Bhutale means on top, on. And Bhu is the earth. So Rupa Goswami is the one who has not only understood the desire, the innermost desire of Mahaprabhu, but he has actually established this movement on the surface of the earth. Swayam Rupah Kadamahyam dadati sva padantikam. So he says, when, kada, when will Srila Rupa Goswami Prabhupada, who has established Mahaprabhu's mission in this way, give me dadati sva pada antikam. Sva pada, sva means self, pada means the feet, the lotus feet. Antikam means proximity or shelter. So when will that Rupa Goswami, who knows the innermost desires of Mahaprabhu's heart and who has established Mahaprabhu's mission on the surface of this earth, place me near his lotus feet and give me shelter? So it is a request, it is a prayer for perfection, in the sense that to be established at the lotus feet of a personality like Rupa Goswami is indeed our perfection. That is a Vaishnava philosophy. As Prabhupada explains again and again, our philosophy is not that we are direct servants of the Lord, but our only aspiration is to be situated at the lotus feet of the devotees of the Lord. Even an exalted devotee like Uddhav aspired to be a blade of grass in Vrindavan, so that the Brajabasis would trample upon him with their lotus feet, and the dust from their feet would always cover him. And Uddhav is no ordinary soul. He is himself an eternal associate of the Lord and considered the foremost amongst the devotees in Dwarka. And still that is his aspiration. So we also must follow in their footsteps. And to be established at the lotus feet of Sri Rupa Goswami, our Sampradaya Acharya, is indeed the perfection of our life. And then in the next verse, Mangalacharan verse, we read of how one offers obeisances to various categories. In this verse, one first of all offers obeisances to one's own spiritual master. Secondly, one offers obeisances unto the previous spiritual masters, that is the sadhus. And therefore the word used again here is in the plural. Thirdly, one offers obeisances to all the Vaishnavas. Fourthly, one offers obeisances to the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. Then one offers obeisances to the Panchatattva. And then one offers obeisances to Radha and Krishna and their associates, and specifically the gopis. So this is the prioritization, this is the order in which we offer obeisances. We don't approach Radha Krishna directly, but this is the medium of approach. First our guru, then their previous gurus, and all the Vaishnavas also. Then Panchatattva, because we can approach Radha Krishna only through Mahaprabhu and his associates. And then we come to Radha Krishna and their associates. So let us chant this verse.
Vandeham Shri Guru, Shri Yuta Pada Kamalam, Shri Guru Vaishnavanscha. Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam. Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam. Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitam Ischa.
So this verse also begins with Vande Aham. I offer my obeisances. To whom? Shri Guroho. The very first word is to my Guru, Shri Guru. And what about the Guru? Padakamalam, Shri Yuta Padakamalam. Padakamalam means lotus feet. Shri Yuta means that which is endowed with all opulences. Shri represents Lakshmi Devi or all opulences. So the lotus feet of Sri Guru are endowed with all opulences. So therefore, I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, and these feet are endowed with all kinds of opulences. Second, Sri Gurun. I also offer my obeisances to all the other gurus, including the previous acharyas. We have been hearing Chaitanya Charitamrita in the Hindi classes that Kaviraj Goswami has also addressed the word guru in the plural by saying gurus, indicating that all the ones, Diksha Guru may be one, but gurus may be many, and the different types of gurus. Kaviraj Goswami has discussed this in the first chapter of the Adi Leela of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So here also, it is Sri Gurun to all the acharyas and the other gurus. Third, Vaishnavamscha, to all the Vaishnavas. We should not neglect the Vaishnavas. So while we offer all respect to the spiritual master, we should also be very reverential to the body of Vaishnavas. We should not disregard them. Next is the six Goswamis. Sri Rupam, led by Sri Rupam, that is Sri Rupa Goswami. Then Sagrajatam. Sa Agra Jatam. Jata means born, Agra means before. So Agra Jata means the older one, older brother. So who is the older brother of Rupa Goswami? Sanatan Goswami. So Sri Rupam Sagra Jatam. So Sagra Jatam refers to Sanatan Goswami. Sahagana, along with their followers and associates, particularly Raghunath Anvitam, like Raghunath Das Goswami, Tam Sajivam, also Jiva Goswami. And then of course there is Raghunath Bhatta and Gopal Bhatta Goswamis also. But that is included in the Sahagana. So it is the six Goswamis, and plus their other associates in Vrindavan. They also could be included in this, because it says associates. There were other Goswamis also who were living, other devotees who came here to live with them in Vrindavan at different points in time. Like, can you name some of the other great devotees who lived here in Vrindavan around the same time? Lokanath Goswami. Who else? Narottam Das Thakur came later. Of course he was there during Jiva Goswami's time. Bhugarbha Goswami. Bhugarbha Goswami, Lokanath Goswami, was some of the early arrivals in Vrindavan. And Shyamananda Pandit and Narottam Das Thakur, Srinivas Acharya, they came a little much later, and they served under Jiva Goswami. But by this time, Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami had departed, and Jiva Goswami had become the chief amongst all the Gaudiya Vaishnavas in Vrindavan. So having offered obeisances to the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, now we come to the Panchatattva. Sa Advaitam. Who is that? Advaita Acharya. Sa Avadhutam. Who is that? Nityananda Prabhu, whose name is Avadhuta. One, or Avadhuta, is one who does not pay regard to social norms and etiquette. Not because he's a hippie. Hippies also don't pay regard to social norms. But here, because he's transcendentally situated, and therefore he is beyond all the norms and etiquettes of this world. So Nityananda Prabhu was like that. And sometimes he would do extraordinary things which would puzzle others who didn't have faith. Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam. Parijana Sahitam, along with their associates. That includes Srivas Thakur, Gadadhar Pandit, and so many other devotees, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. And of course, Krishna Chaitanya Devam, led by, the whole body of devotees was led by Krishna Chaitanya Devam, that is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So in the Panchatattva, who is included? when we chant the Panchatattva mantra, who is included in that Panchatattva mantra? First of all, Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya, then Prabhu Nityananda, then Shri Advaita, then Gadadhar, Srivas, and the sixth also, Adi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Shri Adi means and etc. and others. So it doesn't stop. This Panchatattva mantra, we don't offer obeisances only unto these five, although it says Pancha, that means five, the five truths. But there is a sixth also here, who is in the category of Srivas Thakur. They are also devotees. Srivas Adi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Vrinda means a group. Gaura Bhakta means the devotees of Gauranga Mahaprabhu. So along with Srivas Thakur, there are many, many other devotees. So we are offering obeisances to all of them when we say the Panchatattva mantra. So here also, obeisances are offered to the Panchatattva, including all the devotees of Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu. And finally, we come to Sri Radha Krishna Padam. You offer obeisances to the lotus feet of Sri Sri Radha Krishna, Sahagana, along with their followers. And who are their followers and associates? In particular, Lalita Sri Vishakha Anvitamscha. So Lalita Devi and Vishakha Devi are the two chief gopi associates of Srimati Radharani. They are the prime assistants in the pastimes of Sri Sri Radha Krishna. So their names have been mentioned, but also we should understand that along with Lalita and Vishakha are all the other Brajavasis as well. We are offering respects and obeisances to all these eternal associates of the Lord. Then the next verse is the Sri Krishna Pranam. I think we have now come to Krishna. So this is a verse, of course, we also are very familiar with. So let us chant.
He Krishna Karuna Sindhu, Dina Bandho Jagatpate, Gopesha Gopika Kanta, Radha Kanta Namostute.
Yet the Supreme Lord is addressed by how many names? Please count. This is called a Sri Krishna Pranam. We are offering obeisances to Krishna the Supreme Lord. So the Lord is addressed by how many names in this verse? Seven. What's the first name? Krishna. Hey Krishna. So we are calling out. At the end we say, Namaha Astu Te. I offer my obeisances unto you. Unto which person are we offering obeisances? Now we are calling out, Hey Krishna. It's a form of calling. Especially when the calling is in a mood of dependence or desperation or devotion, then we use the word Hey. Or if it is in a mood of intimacy or in a mood of gentleness, the different moods in which these words can be used. But here it is used in a mood of calling out for protection. So the first thing is He Krishna. The word Krishna means all attractive. Every name of Krishna has a meaning, not like some names today. We make it a point to actually ask everybody when they say, this is such and such, his name is so and so. So we ask, do you know the meaning of your name? Many people don't know the meaning of their names. Many names don't have meanings. And some people just give some names because it seems a little nice to hear. But actually, having a nice name is very important. Because you call that name all the time. You're calling that person all the time. And if that person has a name that is devotional, then the persons who are calling him and also the person himself will be benefited so greatly. There are names that are actually quite different, quite harmful, because they mean something else, but because it is fashionable, they put these names, not realizing what these names really mean. So we should always be very thoughtful. Name is a very, very important word. Although we say this is a world of name and form, but still we are individuals. Even in the spiritual world there are names. Every living entity has a name there. And there those names are permanent identities of those individuals. So God also has names. And these names have been given to him by his devotees, out of love, based on his qualities, his pastimes and so on. So hey Krishna. Krishna is the chief name of the Supreme Lord, because it is the most intimate name, because it includes all other names. The next is Karuna Sindhu. Sindhu, because we are addressing Sindhu. The word Sindhu means ocean. Karuna means mercy. So Krishna is an ocean of mercy. Next, Dina Bandhu. What is the meaning of Dina? Poor. One who is very poor. Bandhu means friend. So the friend of the poor and the downtrodden. Who is poor in this world? One who doesn't have a bank balance? Then who is poor? One who doesn't have Krishna is poor. Srila Prabhupada explains that Dina Bandhu doesn't mean that Krishna is a friend only of those who are economically poor. You may have a rich person who is a saint and a poor person who is a rascal or a rogue. So economic status is not in question here. Dina means anyone who is suffering, who is really poor, who has become wretched, who is somehow here suffering in this material world. Prabhupada said many times that all the material assets we have are like zeros and Krishna is the one, number one. When you have number one and then you put zeros after that, then the value goes on increasing tenfold with every zero you add. But take away that number one and you go on adding the zeros one after the other, even if there are millions of zeros, it's still one big zero. So therefore, if you don't have Krishna in your life, you are Dina. You are poor actually. Even though materially one may have so many things. But real wealth is to be Krishna conscious. But still Krishna is very merciful. He is an ocean of mercy. So he is a friend of those who are poor, downtrodden, wretched, suffering in this world. Jagatpate. Jagatpati. Pati means many things, but basically protector. Jagat means the world. So he is a protector of the world. So we are also part of the world. So he is our protector as well. So if he is capable of protecting the whole world, he is capable of protecting us. So therefore the devotee depends only on Krishna for protection. Next is Gopesha. What does this mean? Yes. Chief of the Gopas, the master of the Gopa. Gopa, Isha. Isha means Lord, Gopa means the cowherd boys. So Gopesha means the Lord of the cowherd men or the cowherd boys. Gopesha. Then is Gopika Kanta. Gopika means the gopis. And Kanta means lover. So he is the lover of all the gopis. And specifically which gopi? Radha. Radha Kanta. He is the eternal lover of Srimati Radharani. Namostu te. Namaha astu te. So I offer my respectful obeisances unto that Supreme Person who is known by all these names. In the next, having spoken about Krishna, now Prabhupada mentions and glorifies Srimati Radharani. So the next verse of the Mangalacharan is Sri Radha Pranam. So we will chant.
Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye.
So Srimati Radharani is Gaurangi, Gaur Angi, whose body is fair, Gaura, not dark, fair, and the complexion more specifically is Tapta Kanchana. Tapta means molten, Kanchana means gold. So Srimati Radharani is fair complexioned, but fair here specifically refers to the complexion like that of molten gold. So that is how Srimati Radharani looks like. Radhe, so her name is Radha. What is the meaning of Radha? Where does it come from? Radha means Rasika, Dhi means Dha means Dhir, yes, but where does the word come from? Aradhitaha. There is a verse, of course we won't discuss all that now, but because she is a supreme worshipper of Krishna, so she is called Radha. There is no greater devotee than Srimati Radharani. She is devotion personified. In fact, she is the ocean of devotion, and all others can get but a drop from that ocean by Srimati Radharani's mercy. So if we want to become devotees, then we need the mercy of Srimati Radharani, because she has it all. She is the ocean. So all we can do is ask, beg just for a few drops. One drop comes in and that will fully satisfy us. Radhe. So when we address, we call Radhe. Hey Radhe. The name is Radha, but when you address, it is called Radhe. Vrindavaneshwari. What is the meaning of that? Ishwari. Ishwari is the feminine gender for Lord of Vrindavan. So this is the kingdom of Srimati Radharani, or should we say the queendom. She is the supreme here. It is her writ that runs here. Even Krishna is subordinate to the writ of Srimati Radharani. And then there is Vrishabhanu Suta. Sute, because she's being addressed like that. So Suta means Sute. The daughter, it refers to a child, so here it refers to the daughter of King Vrishabhanu, the father of Srimati Radharani. Her mother's name is Kirtida. And Devi, so she is a supreme goddess. In this material world, people worship Devi, but they worship a different kind of Devi. Which Devi? Durga Devi. But Durga Devi is but a reflection of the expansion of Srimati Radharani. Ultimately. So the ultimate goddess is Srimati Radharani. Pranamami, I offer my respectful obeisances. Hari Priya. Hari Priya means one who is dear to Lord Hari. Actually, there is a... You know the story of Tirupati Balaji, many of you, right? At least you know something. You know when Bhrigu Muni came, Bhrigu Muni was nominated by the demigods to identify which among Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva is supreme. Because in the debate, the demigods were unable to decide. So Bhrigu Muni went, and he went in front of Brahma first. He didn't offer him respects deliberately. Now Bhrigu Muni is Brahma's son. So when the son approaches the father, he's supposed to offer respects. But because he didn't, Brahmaji felt offended. But because he's self-controlled, he held himself back. But still somehow or other, you know, his eyes showed that anger. So Bhrigu Muni understood that he's not fully self-controlled. He can't be the Supreme Lord. He still got angry because he wasn't given the proper respect. So he went to Lord Shiva. And then he increased his offense a little more. Here it was only an offense that was he didn't show respect. Here he actually spoke. Oh, what is this, Shivji? Look at you, you're looking, you're covered with crematorium ashes and there's skulls and bones and snakes all around you and so on and so forth. Shivji became so angry he was going to pick up his trident to kill him. And only because Parvati Devi was there that somehow Bhrigu Muni was saved. And then Bhrigu Muni also understood, no, this is not the Supreme Lord. And then he increased his offense a little more this time when he went to Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu was lying there and Lakshmi Devi was with him, serving him nicely. And he went and kicked the chest of the Lord, something unthinkable. Of course, this is all a pastime by which the Lord wants to teach us many things, and the Lord also wants to perform pastimes like this. So immediately the Lord got up. He caught hold of Bhrigu Muni's feet and said, oh, my dear Muni, my chest is so hard, I hope it hasn't hurt your foot. And he started massaging Bhrigu Muni's foot in case it had got hurt by impact with his hard chest, as the Lord himself put it. And Bhrigu Muni was completely floored to see this attitude of the Lord. And he said, yes, only this can be the Lord. Nobody else can be the Lord. So the Lord took it very nicely. Bhrigu Muni went back satisfied and declared to all the demigods that Vishnu is the Supreme. But Lakshmi Devi was not happy at all. And she says, how can this happen? How can this Brahmana come and assault and insult my husband like this? She became very upset, very angry. And she said, I cannot tolerate this. And I will go and perform austerities, because you also are just taking it in your stride. I cannot take it. So she went to a place called Kolhapur, which is in the southern part of Maharashtra. There's a famous Mahalakshmi temple there. So she went there to do austerities. And then the Lord found himself vacant and without Lakshmi Devi in Vaikuntha. He was thinking, well, life is not the same. So I have to go down now. I also have to do austerities. I have to regain the association of Lakshmi Devi. So he came down. And eventually he ended up at Tirupati. So those who go to Tirupati, they first usually go to Kolhapur to get darshan of Lakshmi Devi. And then they go to Tirupati to have darshan of Balaji or Lord Vishnu there. So there is a special train of the Indian Railways that runs from Kolhapur to Tirupati. Because many people, many devotees and pilgrims come like this. They first go to Kolhapur and then they want to go to Tirupati. So they established a special train link just for this purpose. And some years ago, they put out an advertisement in the papers, newspaper, asking for suggestions for a name for this train. You know, most of the trains, and they have some names, Rajdhani Express or so on and so forth. So then many, many people wrote in suggestions. One lady from the congregation of devotees, ISKCON devotees in Kolhapur, she wrote in and she quoted this verse, the Radha Pranam Mantra, Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye. So she suggested the name Hari Priya Express. Just like here we had earlier Radharani Express from Mathura to Vrindavan. I think now it's not functioning. We hope it will start once again soon. And then of all the thousands of people who must have written in, they selected this one. Because she had quoted the verse and she had written a nice letter. And so now the train is called Hari Priya Express from this verse. That was an ISKCON devotee's contribution. So that's Hari Priya. Hari Priya is one who is dear to Lord Hari. And then Vaishnava Pranam. We chant that every day also. Vancha kalpataru bhyascha
कृपा सिंधुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः।
वांछा कल्प तरु, अ विश फुलफिलिंग ट्री। तरु इज अ ट्री, वांछा इज डिजायर। इन द स्पिरिचुअल वर्ल्ड देयर आर विश फुलफिलिंग ट्रीज। यू जस्ट स्टैंड इन फ्रंट ऑफ एनी ट्री एंड ऑल योर डिजायर्स विल बी फुलफिल्ड। इन द मटेरियल वर्ल्ड वी डोंट हैव सच ट्रीज। इन वृंदावन वी डू। The Vrindavan, all these trees are wish-fulfilling trees. So one devotee asked Srila Prabhupada one time, Prabhupada, how is it that if these trees are wish-fulfilling trees, our desires are not fulfilled? So Prabhupada explained, it's not that you just go in under a tree and ask, please give me pizza and you'll get pizza. Of course, Prabhupada didn't say pizza, I'm just adding that. But he said, not that you can go there and ask anything and it'll be fulfilled. You have to perform austerities. You have to qualify. Then you will understand that these are kalpa vrikshas, and then they will reciprocate with you. It's not a cheap thing. One time there was this person who was very tired after a long journey. He was hungry also. He came and sat under a tree. He didn't have any food. There was nobody to give him food, but since he was tired, he thought he would go to sleep. So as he was lying down, he thought, oh, I wish I had some nice food. And lo and behold, in front of him, some nice dishes came up. Wonderful food there. So he was very happy. He started eating everything. He was satisfied. He asked for a little more of this, more of that. Everything just appeared as if by magic. And then he was satisfied, and then he said, oh, I wish I had a nice little bed to sleep on. And suddenly a bed appeared, and then he lay there, and he was comfortably situated. And in this way, whatever he asked for just manifested. And then he was thinking, now everything I'm thinking of is happening, so what if a tiger comes and eats me? So the tiger came and ate him. And that was the end of that experience of the wish-fulfilling tree in this material world. So therefore, if some people have some kind of sorrow that there are no wish-fulfilling trees here, perhaps it's better. Otherwise, we may end up like this gentleman who somehow stumbled into a wish-fulfilling tree, but see what happened as a result of that. But in the spiritual world, the trees are not like this. And the Vaishnavas are all like that. They are wish-fulfilling trees. Vancha kalpa taru, tarubhya, the plural, all of them are like that. Kripa sindhu, they are also an ocean of mercy, just like the ocean is Krishna is an ocean of mercy. So how can both be an ocean of mercy? Because if you connect something to the ocean, it's as good as the ocean, isn't it? Suppose you have a huge pipe that comes in from the ocean, unlimited flow coming in. So you can get the whole, it's as connected to the ocean, so all the water can come in, as much as you want, can come in. So therefore, because the devotees are connected to Krishna, so therefore the same ocean of mercy that is Krishna becomes available through the medium of the devotee. So the mercy of Krishna is channeled through the devotee. And this is what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, actually, that Krishna gives his mercy wherever the devotees give their mercy. Krishna's mercy follows the mercy of the devotees. Therefore, the devotees are also called Kripa Sindhubhya, plural. Patitanam Pavanebhya. Those who are fallen, they can deliver them. Pavana. Pavan to purify. Patit means those who are fallen. Patitanam, of those who are fallen. They are the purifiers, the deliverers. Because they are the ocean of mercy, and because they are compassionate upon the fallen souls, therefore they can deliver them. Vaishnavebhya. These are the Vaishnavas. Namo Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto them. So there are two more verses which we'll discuss tomorrow, and then we'll go on to the text of the introduction. So we've overstepped our time a little bit. This is actually 15 minutes fast. We should get it right. this clock here. So we'll stop here for now. Or rather, we'll just, since we still have 2 minutes or so, we'll just finish the next two. One is the Panchatattva Mantra, so we'll chant that as well.
Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhara, Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda.
I offer my obeisances to Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita, Gadadhar, Shri Vas, and all others in the line of devotion. And then finally the Hare Krishna Mantra.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama Hare Hare.
So with this we end the Mangalacharan and we'll begin the text from tomorrow. So are there any questions or comments? Padmavati. Well, the fact is that when she came for tapasya, she came here first to Kolhapur. She resided there. And somehow, this is a long story, but we'll have to explain so many intricacies of the whole story. But Vishnu resides there in Tirupati. Padmavati is here at the foothills. But the original Lakshmi Devi came first to Kolhapur. Oh, this is very popular. That's how many pilgrims, they go first to Kolhapur and then they go to Tirupati.
Hare word, Hare.
Yes.
Hare Krishna, Hare Rama.
Yes.
Can you just please explain what is exactly Hare?
Hare is a form of address for Hari. Just like we have Radhe Vrindavaneshwari, Radhe, the name is Radha. But in the form of address, it becomes Radhe. Similarly, form of Hari, when you address, it becomes Hare. There's Hara and then it becomes Hare. So Hari means one who takes away everything inauspicious. Sarva Amangala Hare. So one who takes away everything inauspicious is Hari. Premadiya Mana Hare. Also one who steals our mind by giving us love of God is also Hari or Krishna. One who steals the mind of Hari is Hara. And when it's addressed, it becomes Hare. So Hare refers to the energy of the Lord. So when we say Hare Krishna, we say Radha Krishna. It refers to the consort. The consort of the Lord is His personified energy.
When we say Hare Ram, that means Sita. Sita Ram.
The word Ram, the question is whether when we say Hare Ram, the word Hare means Sita. The answer is, Prabhupada has said that the word Ram in the Hare Krishna Mantra could mean so many things. It could mean Lord Ramachandra of Ayodhya. It could mean Parashuram. It could mean Balaram, because Balaram is also called Ram in the Srimad Bhagavatam and other scriptures. And it could also mean directly Krishna, Radha Raman Ram. One who enjoys with Srimati Radharani. So that is also Ram. So all these four possibilities are there. And it depends basically on the mood of the worshipper. But specifically, the Gaudiya Acharyas, although they accept all four, they don't deny any of these four, but specifically when they say Ram, they refer to Krishna as Radha Ramana. So the word Hare, when we chant as followers of Gauranga Mahaprabhu, it always means Radharani. And Krishna and Ram both really mean Krishna. But it is not wrong to say that Hare Ram, Ram refers to Ayodhya, the Lord of Ayodhya. In which case, then Hare of course refers to Sita Devi. So we'll stop here. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Gaur Premanande. Thank you.